Oh, I'm hitting record.
Welcome back, cowboys and cowgirls, to the next episode of Ingles and Ian, a CowboysRideForFree.com podcast. And I got through it without stuttering. How about that? But unlike normal,
hallelujah,
your good friend and mine, Ian, is off doing other things. So we have the granddaddy of them all. Robert, how are you doing today, buddy?
Doing all right, man. It's a Monday night, and OU is getting their ass lathered right now by Wichita State. So can't be. This is the greatest Monday night ever.
Except for when OSU wins the Natty next year on Monday night.
I'm not even going to go there. This is a new me. I've started 2022. My resolution is stay in the moment. So I'm enjoying the softball win. Baseball, okay. And golf,
rough weekend
okay.
For
right. Not a great weekend for baseball. Golf, you know, golf has got it going on for both the men and the women. So, yeah. And listen, by the time that's over, we've really only got a month till fall football gets going.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm impressed with the women, the fact that they lost their two best golfers during the season and are still making the tournament. That's impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive. You know, obviously, if you want to go on the message board, you're like, oh, my God, what's going on with OSU golf? But the fact that the women's team, really, you could say, is almost, you know, it's in the same level of discussion as the men's team.
Right. And that's never been the case as long as I can remember. They've all, like, I assume they got a new coach a couple of years ago and he turned the program around. You may know
yes.
more about that than I do.
Yeah, no, they did. They've got a new coach, and I don't know if it's, I want to say 3 years at least. It's 3 years, I think. If it's four, that's the most. I can't think five. Yeah, I could be wrong, but excuse me. I tried to inhale the scotch as opposed to swallow it. So
you would know more about this than I would, but like, what does a collegiate golf coach really do? Like, obviously, there's swing instruction and those kind of things and recruiting, but is there like some secret sauce in there that coaches do? Is it more of like prep? Is it analytics? Like, talk to me about that part of coaching golf.
Yeah, so golf to me, I've spent a lot of time. I was in the industry, right? I taught for almost 20 years. I still, on the odd occasion, teach. Don't tell the USGA that. But I accept bottles of scotch and certificates to dinner for my efforts. You know, golf, to me, it's kind of much like wrestling in okay. that it's an individual thing, right? You're not, you know, or tennis, you know, even tennis. Even though you can play doubles in tennis, right, that's kind of a team thing. Think individual tennis, right? It's just me. I can only deal with me. But golf is even worse than those, right?
There is
so
no
if you think
right?
right, so there's no. So if you think wrestling or you think tennis, your physical activity can have a physical impact on your opponent, right? Whereas in golf, the only way to have a physical impact on your opponent is to have a mental impact. Because I could drill a tee shot. I can knock it stiff, right? That has zero physical impact on the other person. It's like I punched him in the gut. It's not like I grabbed him around in the head and locked him in, you know, got him in a headlock or a full Nelson or something like that. Or it's not like I hit a serve 110 miles an hour that they just couldn't get to, right? So golf to me is really about it. It's about two things. It's about learning to channel your own sort of emotional energy, right? How do you channel it? I wouldn't say control it. Control is a tough word. It comes to emotion, right? But how do you take that energy that you get and channel it into the right thing, right? The right focus, the right energy, number one. And then number two, how do you just stay present? How do you look at something and go, well, the only thing I control is me. I can't control that guy over there. So when he hits it stiff from 200 yards, when, you know, we call it the old Mongolian reversal, right? You're 100 yards from the flag. That dude's in the rough 170 yards away. And you're thinking, I've got this guy. I've got this guy. I've got him. And then that dude freaking bounces. He ricochets it off the high edge of a bunker and it goes straight sideways and rolls down and hits the flag and stops a foot from the hole. Now what do you do? And being able to not allow that to impact you, right? So it's understanding how it's really about understanding how to channel your own stuff, right? And deal with your own stuff. I can't do anything with him. It's not like I could guard him tighter,
right?
It's not like we can't double team him. You can't feed him to the baseline defender. You can't, you know, lock him up because he's good on his feet. So I'm going to lock him up and get close. You know, they're bad at taking the, you know, they're bad at taking the high bouncing serve. So I'm going to serve flat. You know, you can't have a physical impact on the other player. So the only thing you control is yourself. That's it. So that's where it's what's interesting is for me when I watch tour golf, to me, TV golf is okay. Get the sensors out, get the bleepers out. TV golf is boring as fuck. Okay. It's boring because a lot of the guys now, you know, they stay very calm. They, you know, they're very centered. They're very present. They stay pretty calm. You don't see a lot going on. And that's, I think, a lot why, you know, somebody like Tiger who comes along, right? Who did the fist pump, you know, yeah, the fist pump. Even Phil showed emotion. Sergio showed emotion. Seve showed emotion. You know, Lee Trevino, you know, with the putter and he would, you know, whatever. Chichi Rodriguez back in the day, right? And why did everybody hate Nicklaus? They hated him because he was like the Terminator coming down the back nine who just relentlessly, you know, so there was the emotion involved, but the vast majority of tour guys now it's, you got to stay calm. You got to stay level, you know, and even me and my amateur stuff here, I can feel, you know, if I make two consecutive birdies, which is not unreasonable for me to do. I did it this past weekend. If I make two consecutive birdies, if I'm walking up on the next tee, I feel it.
Right.
My heart is like, my heart's a little extra. And so I'm trying to calm myself down, especially if it's the eighth hole, which sucks. And I play horribly and I get too cocky and I hit it in a spot where I end up making double, you know, so it's like that golf instruction is so much more about the mental aspect. And even for a really good player, when in doubt, do what you know you can repeat, right? That's the big thing. Do what you know you can repeat without even thinking about it, right? I had a golf coach when I went back to school. I went to Dodge City Community College, okay? And the golf coach, that I never saw that guy break 90. He was our golf coach. He knew where every 84 lumber yard was located in southwestern Kansas. Because if we were in the van going to a meet and he knew there was an 84 Lumber on the road, he would tell us, put your heads down, close your eyes, put your heads down. He didn't want us to see that number. Okay. And so it was so much about the psychological part of the game, because you couldn't, you know, it's not like I can take a 9-iron and go beat Jacob over the head on the 9th hole when he's one up and I need to win a hole. It's like, I got to do something myself. So that's golf. That's golf instruction, is really, can you try to drill in a physical motion that the student finds repeatable? And if they find it repeatable and they can repeat it, then the rest of it is, how do you mentally approach something? I've been very fortunate to have given instruction to some really, really good amateurs in this area. Some guys who have qualified for some state opens and things like that. And the instruction with them is so much more mental. It's so mental. Like, you really don't, like, you watch a guy hit a ball and you're like, I am not fucking with that. But how do I get them to mentally see and feel what they want to do when they want to do it? Right. And it really turned into, with this one guy, Kevin Loretti, young guy, and we've become good friends. And I said to him one day on the range, why are you here with me? I said, you're swinging the club so beautifully. I said, why are you here talking to me on the driving range? He said, because I've never seen anybody accept reality on a golf course better than you. And he said, I need to understand how to accept reality based on what I can do. And that just floored me. I didn't ask him why he thought that. I was like, I didn't want to act like I was fishing for a compliment. But that just nailed me when he said that. I was like, you know what? When you're swinging that well, how do you make decisions on a golf course that suit what you do and accept making a decision at moments that, you know, that it, the course is tempting you to do what you don't normally do? How do you overcome that obstacle? And if you take that to the tour level of player, think about the specificity of a moment for a tour level guy who knows exactly how far he hits his 52 degree wedge. Like, when I say exactly, he knows hit that thing 102 and a half yards.
Well, that's something I was explaining to a friend of mine. I'm like, look, because, you know, bad golfers are like 110, 115. Pros are like, is it 112 or is it 113? Like
that. Right. There's a great story about Colin Montgomery back in the day where the caddy tells him, see the top of that tree, right? The point of that tree, you want to hit it at that and let it slide left. And he goes, wait a minute, are you talking about the right side of the point of the tree or the left side of the point of the tree? Like he was getting so fine, like me. The guy said the top of the tree. I'm looking at a 5-yard area around the top of the tree and hoping I can hit it there. And this guy is like getting it so dialed down. And it's interesting. We talk about golf this way. Like you ask about golf. Relatively speaking, for any sport, as you get to those higher and higher levels, right, it becomes so much more fine-tuned relative to the level, right?
Right.
It's fascinating. That's a fascinating thing to me. It's something I'm always curious about and I'm interested in. And I love listening to professional athletes talk about their environment and how it it either slows down, you know, it's the old Matrix, the Matrix, right? How it all slows down and you begin to see all the stuff that was like blowing past you. You begin to see it all in slow motion. And how that relates to different sports, right? How does that relate to football versus basketball versus tennis or baseball or golf, you know, or softball, you know? That's, you've got me all wound up, damn it, Jacob.
So, like, I'm going to ask you another golf-related question, but I do have something to, like jump in on this, like, fine-tuning. So, for several years, I was a pretty high-level curler. It's one of those things, almost qualified for nationals, that kind of crap. I could literally feel the difference between a 3.8-second stone and a 3.75-second stone.
Right.
Like, I could feel the difference in 500ths of a second.
Yeah. And that's what it's like.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. And if you can actually take this out to literally anything you do in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If you are a professional at something, okay, you think about what you do at a level that the person who's not a professional at it can't think about it, right? They just can't think about it. My wife works in retail. Oh, it's carpet. I mean, it's carpet, it's rugs, it's, and she can talk about that at a level that my first question is here, and her first question is down here.
Oh, yeah. I know that feeling.
But she forwarded me a text she got, a spam text that was asking her to click on a link. And it said something about billing or your account. Oh, it was a Netflix. It was a spam Netflix. And she forwarded me the text and you could see the link in my text. And the minute I looked at the link, I was like, oh, that's bullshit.
Right.
So I call her on the phone and I said, I have one question. I said, when have you ever gotten a text from Netflix about your Netflix account? Oh, never. And I said, look at the link. Netflix is spelled wrong. The minute she gets it, she's just the normal consumer. And you can see why spam email and crap like that works. She's the normal bread and butter consumer who's not immediately thinking somebody's trying to hack me or somebody's trying to spam me or whatever. I work in IT. And that's literally the first thing. If I get an email, whether it's personal or work or a text,
oh,
or
you
DM,
always open up.
My first, I'm like, wait, I look, I'm like, whoa, no, wait a minute. That doesn't look right. And I look at the address or I look at a link. I'm immediately suspicious, right? She doesn't live in that world. So that is all over the place. Is the more fine-tuned you become, the more professional you become at anything you do, you literally, the 12 decisions, right, the 12 thoughts that you've got to have from the beginning, those literally happen instantaneously for you as a professional. You go right past them all and you're already to the eighth level, okay? Where somebody like my wife, she's at the first level. But if I deal with her in her world, I'm at the first level, she's at the eighth level, right? So I think that extends to sports. And that's why it's fascinating to me, you know, to listen to guys be authentic, right? Really be authentic and talk about their experience, because it almost always comes down to, Gundy talks about this, it almost always comes down to how stuff slows down.
Right. Especially, right? Like, he says that a lot with quarterbacks, especially.
Yeah, right. The crap starts to slow down, right? And so it's the term slow down just means your brain is not having to process that because it's already processed it prior. Like it already made those decisions, you know, 30 seconds ago, and it's already to the next thing, you know, and that's what the slowdown means. So that's, that's great. And here we go. Who thought we could have gone here on a Cowboys Ride for Free podcast?
All right. So I'm going to ask you to put your golf instructor hat on for a second.
Oh, God. Okay.
What the fuck happened with Ricky Fowler?
Oh, at that level? So if you think about it that level, right, I'm going to tell a story that has nothing to do with Ricky Fowler, but I think it emphasizes – I'm going to tell two stories, right? And it's going to – what it's going to do, it's going to emphasize the difference, the absolutely minuscule difference between levels of excellence, right, in any sport, really. So when I was a club pro and I was playing, I was working at a club for like 7 years up in the Syracuse, New York area. And I was playing in a pro-am and I was paired with another club pro, Mark Tucker, who in our Central New York section, he was hands best golfer in our section. Nobody could argue that. If he showed up to the event, everybody was thinking, who's finishing second, right? And we ended up, it was just a one amateur, right? So we played in a foursome. He had an amateur, I had an amateur. And we played, and he played probably not his best round, and I played a really good round, and we ended up tying as individual pros. I think we tied for fourth or something, and we had lunch. We were having lunch with our amateurs, and I asked him, because the year before he had qualified for he'd either qualified for the U.S. Open or he'd qualified for the PGA. I want to say it's U.S. Open, but I asked him, I said, dude, I said, you're Mark. And he was a cool dude. He was so chill. And I was like, Mark, I said, you're so good. I said, why, you know, you ever think like you go give like the, I think it, at that time it was the Hooters tour, right? Wasn't even right, the Nike, yeah. Right? It was that. I was like, you ever think about doing that? I said, you're so good. Like, you know, I think you could get a sponsor and give it a go. He goes, Robert, he goes, you know how we go play in our section championship, right? And he'd won the section championship a couple of times. He says, if you take the top 10 of those guys and you go to the national PGA tournament, there's a couple hundred guys that are that good or better. Okay. If you take the top 10 club pros and you go to the Hooters, Nike tour, you know, whatever that is, because there's like 1,000 guys in the world that are that good or better. If you take the top 10 or 20 guys from that and you go to the regular tour, there's like 500 guys in the world that are that good or better. And so he said, his point was that the margin between those levels was so fine, right, that one guy who's the best here, you take him over there, and there's like 500 guys that good, right? The second story that emphasizes that, there was an interview. Everybody knows who Peter – if you followed golf, and the history of golf, Peter Jacobson. Right. He was the quintessential tour journeyman. Okay. One of those dudes wasn't ever going to win a major, just was out there cashing a check, making cuts, right? And there was a year where he qualified for the Ryder Cup. Okay. Now I'm going to let my dog in here. She's barking. My playmate. Yes, come on in. Come here. Come here. You say hi. There he is. Say hi to Jacob. There you go. That's Lucy. Yes. Hi, Lucy. Lucy, say hi to everybody out there on Twitter who's not going to listen to this. So, so Peter Jacobson, there was a 1 year where he had a particularly good year and he qualified for the Ryder Cup. And there was an interview where they asked him about, what did you do? You know, you made a swing change. You, you know, what did you do? And he said, well, he says, I cut down my average number of putts per round by one. So think about that. Let's say you went from 34 putts around to 33 putts around. Doesn't sound like much.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, anyone out there podcasting who doesn't golf, that's not right? Whatever.
Like, four rounds of golf on the tour, over four rounds of golf, that's at least four shots. And his next comment was, four strokes on the tour is the difference between barely making the cut and then cashing a $10,000 check or finishing in the top 10 and making 200K.
Right.
And that just, you know, those two stories for me encapsulate professional athletics and amateur athletics, right? That the level, I always make a comment to my wife, like you watch like either American Idol or we go to like our synagogue here and somebody does a musical thing. And you're like, holy crap. Wow. They're incredible. Look at them. They're playing an instrument and singing on key and it's beautiful. And then you think they can't go out and put a top 10 hit on the Billboard charts. So it's just, to me, it's just, that just fascinates me that the difference between what you run into every day in your life and what we watch and go, wow, that's incredible, is so minuscule, it would blow your mind. Right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was dating a professional bassoonist for a while, and like listening to her practice routines and stuff, I'm like, holy shit, that's insane.
Yeah.
like just that level of perfection is so crazy. And it's also interesting to me, especially that you're talking about like mental stuff and golf, like, you know, Spieth has never been the same since he chunked that wedge at the Masters.
Right.
He was going.
And let me tell you, so to take it back to your point about Ricky Fowler, right?
Yeah.
There's a point at which you make choices. What am I willing and what is necessary for me to sacrifice, right? First of all, what's necessary for me to sacrifice? Because maybe somebody's got the mental attitude where they can have a family, wife, kids, distractions, and they can still do at that level, right? Being aware of that, knowing what it is you really want, what do I have to have? What am I willing to give up of myself? And that's not to say, I don't want anybody here to go, oh, you're saying Ricky doesn't want to give it up. I don't mean that in a negative way, right? So what if he doesn't want to give that up?
Yeah.
He has a career. He's whatever, right? And that's cool. And he's made a choice. And that's perfectly okay, right?
Yeah, well, it's just the thing with him is like, you know, he had that one season where he finished runner-up in four straight majors.
Yeah.
And then like a season or two later, he had that epic players win. You're like, all right, now's the time. He's finally ready to make the run. And he just poof.
And gone. It wasn't there. It wasn't there for him, which which emphasizes, no matter what the activity, the difference between those that become Michael Jordan, a Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, a Tom Brady, okay, a Peyton Manning, a Joe Montana, all right? The difference is mental. It's not physical. The difference is mental because they've made a choice. Somebody said to me once that that great champions are made by the ability to take every ounce of energy and emotion they feel and channel it into the great thing, right? In other words, take that and channel it into the good thing. Most of us get too jacked up, right? That's what happens on a golf course. I've made 3, 4, 5. I'm not a great bowler, but I had a period of time where I was a pretty good bowler, and I threw the first 9.
Been there.
Dude.
Right through the face?
I had no chance. I had no chance.
But knowing how most bowlers are, you went right through the one pin, didn't you?
Oh, no, I threw it in the gutter. I threw a big hook. I threw a big hook. So my play was to line up left and really throw hard out to that gutter and keep it, and it would get just outside that first arrow. That was my perfect ball. Just outside that arrow, and then that thing would just snap at the end. And I was so juiced. I mean, that ball hit the gutter. It bounced. It hit the gutter so hard. It bounced. And so that's what you're talking about, right? Is that moment where when faced with the very thing that you want and you are on a roll and you can do no wrong, that you're able to just be present and be in the moment, and it's just that thing, right? Oh, I'm going to hit my next shot. What's the next shot? You know, what's the next play? What's our next play? Where's the safety? Okay, do my routine. That is what makes the greats great. And then when that moment does arrive that says, you've done everything you're capable, but I need you now to do something extraordinary. All your energy can go to that because you've not wasted any energy on that other stuff. You're not wasting any effort on doing your normal crap, and you can pile it all into that one moment, and that one moment won't feel that big of a deal because you've been doing it, right? It just fascinates me. Then we've spent all this time now, okay, and we have not talked, other than mentioning Ricky Fowler, we have not talked about OSU sports.
Oh, I mean, we did mention softball, which is great. I mean, granted, they got swept during the regular season, but for the most part, the year of Bedlam is still going on. We've had a lot of Bedlam wins this year, which is the best.
How far did Alo hit that ball? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Holy crap.
I don't know, but it was a solid 450. I mean, he just jacked that thing.
That thing, I mean, when she hit that, and they're showing it, and you're not seeing the ball, and the left fielder's just sort of looking, and then the ball lands maybe, I don't know, 10 to 20 feet short of the warning track of the baseball field.
Yeah.
And it was like, when she came up the next time, it's like, I wanted to hide. I was like, she's going to hit a ball. It's going to land in Stamford, Connecticut. Holy crap. That was so exciting. I yelped. I scared my wife, scared the dogs. I was like, was there Morgan Day, the pitcher? I was way too intense. That was great.
Yeah, it's great. First ever Big 12 championship, tournament championship for them. Yep. I mean, all roads lead to Rome, right? So it feels like, so we dropped, what, the final five? Did we win one versus Florida State, or did we lose both of those?
We lost both. We lost five.
So yeah, you've got to figure. Granted, beating OU is a big shot in the arm, right? They're like, okay, we can slay the giant. A lot of these girls did it last year, but you're going to have to go through one of those two teams, if not both those two teams again. And granted, Day got hurt, so she didn't get to play much.
I'm sorry, laughing. OU's getting beat 13-0 by Wichita State.
Anyway, Day got hurt, so she didn't get to play against OU at all. And I don't think she got to play against Florida State either. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, how good is this team really?
But did you read the thing about and how I guess, I don't know how you say his name. Ken what? The coach. I feel horrible. I feel horrible. Gajewski. I've never actually heard it pronounced, so I don't know. I'm probably going to get bombed on Twitter for whatever. But there was a tremendous interview about he read a book, a whole like an audio book. Like he listened to a whole audio book in like 90 minutes on the night before. And I'm trying to remember what the name of it was, but it was something to the effect of, you know, how to win now, or, you know, how to change how you win now, or it was, you know, something like that. And I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I get the sense that it led into what they did the next day. I think he talked about that in the interview. That changing pitchers to keep OU's batters off balance in the middle of the game. Right. So in other words, don't give them a chance to go through the lineup two full times, you know, right. Or, you know, you've gone through the lineup. You know,
for baseball, it's the third time through the third time through that pitcher starts getting tagged.
Right. And that's, they were doing the same. He did the same thing. Like, I don't care that she's a great pitcher. I'm going to switch to another pitcher so that they don't have a line on this. And I'll look that book. I'm going to go back and look up that interview, because I have a sneaking suspicion that what that book might be pointing to is never be so good that you can't like change something up in the moment. Right. So that by God, Jacob, I'm looking at this horse cowboy thing on the wall in your hotel room.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's like, it's very appropriate. You're doing an Oklahoma State Cowboys, you know, podcast, and you've got a cowboy on a horse in the background. That's very good.
I am in Texas after all, so.
Well, my apologies. That's, you know, my condolences, actually.
I'm not just in Texas. I'm in frickin' Plano of all places.
Oh, which good is Lord.
God awful. I'm so glad I did not move. I'm so glad I did not move here when I took my current job.
Well, there you go. All your Plano followers just left. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So, Pistol Rick's going to be pissed.
That's it. So no. So I think I'd be really curious to see what that book is really about. Like, I want to look that book up, because it feels like it might have been saying, look, I don't care how good you are. you can't be afraid to do something different in the moment, right? When it's called for, try something different. If you're, you know, if you're beating your head against the wall, right? And with OU, you're freaking beating your OU softball team. You're beating your head against the wall.
They're so good.
They played how many games? 50-ish games, and they've lost two times. That's stupid. So, you know, kudos to him for, you know, staying up half the night, I guess, and listening to this audio book all in one night. Because, I mean, he said that's kind of what set him on the path of, you know what, we're going to change pitchers in the middle of the game.
Which is completely unheard of in softball, because most pitchers, I mean, there are times where a pitcher in softball will throw both ends of a doubleheader.
Yeah.
You know, it is completely, like, I've only started really getting into softball in the last couple of years, but I'm a big baseball guy. I'm like, no, they go every 5 days. And softball pitchers are like, no, I'll go twice in a weekend.
Listen. I've gotten in, you know, when I had my, you know, a month and a half ago when I had my COVID quarantine, I'm down here. I've got, you know, I'm in the man cave. I've got two TVs going and I'm watching something on one TV. I'm like, you got to put something on the other TV. You can't have a dead TV down here in the man cave. And so I end up putting on cricket.
Okay.
And everybody's like, oh my God, cricket? It's like rocket science. I can't figure that crap out. Well, there's a version of cricket now that is no different than saying, what's that?
It's a test match, I think is what it's called.
Well, no. So the test matches are the crap you don't want to watch, because that's the crap that takes like 2 and 3 days. Okay.
Oh, no.
You don't want to watch that. Cause I don't want to get into all the rigmarole of it, but it's literally the way the game is played. A test match, if you've got a batter who's really good at just getting in the way and blocking the ball with the bat, you're never going to get the guy out. You're literally never going to get the guy out. He's going to single you to death. Okay. This new version of cricket, it's called T20, and it's going to last. It's going to be like a football game or a baseball game, right? 3-ish hours. And the only thing I could liken it to is in baseball, imagine instead of switching every 3 outs. Okay.
Okay.
Imagine that you flip the coin at the beginning of the game, and it was your choice. Did you want to pitch first or do you want to bat first? And if you choose to bat first, all your guys are going to bat. Okay. But there's no strikeouts. That guy bats until you either, you know, catch a fly ball, or he swings and misses and hits an obstacle behind him. That's the wickets in cricket. It's the wickets, right? Or you pitch and he gets in the way with his body and you challenge it. And they determined that if he hadn't gotten in the way with his body, it would have hit the obstacle. He would be out. Right? Or let's say he hits it and he starts running. That would be like what we, you know, you hit it and you start running and they throw to first, get him out. Right. So let's say you hit it and you start running and they hit the wickets with the ball before you get to the base. Okay? So there's no strikeouts. There would be literally no foul balls, right? So imagine a dude who's throwing heat. He's throwing 100 miles an hour. Well, as a batter, I could say, you know what? I don't need to hit the ball forward. I could just tip and let the ball go over my head. And if it goes out of play, that's a certain number of runs. Right? So it's pretty fascinating. And the guys that pitch, I mean, I watch this. Every six pitches is like a break. So they throw six balls, and then the same bowler, a pitcher is called a bowler, the same bowler could throw two sets of six pitches. So he could throw six pitches, then he could throw six pitches again, but then now he's got to sit out. He's got to sit out. Now he could come back and he might be able, I'm not 100% clear, he might be able to come back and he might be able to do a total of four of those sets in a full match, okay? But those guys are throwing the ball. Some of them are throwing it at 90 plus miles an hour. And they're coming back and they're bowling again. But they're only throwing maybe 12, right? And then they're sitting out and somebody else is throwing, right? And you've got spinners. So you get the guy who throws junk, okay? He's throwing junk. That ball's landing. They bounce the ball. They tend to bounce the ball, right, first. Right. And that ball's bouncing and like ricocheting. And depending on the conditions, right? So the bowling pitch, let's say there's some humidity in the air, right? Well, you know from golf, what does a ball tend to do on wet turf? It tends to skid, kind of skip. Mm-hmm. Well, same thing in cricket, okay? The ball, if you're a spinner, the ball doesn't react as well coming off of the ball doesn't react as well coming off of the pitch. So a speed bowler is better when you have conditions where the ball tends to skid. If the ball tends to ricochet, so really dry, kind of dusty conditions, so the ball hits and it reacts, you want a spinner. And it's fascinating. And you've got Indians, South Africans, Brits, Australians, New Zealanders, all commentating this stuff. And it's fantastic. It's the second highest spectator sport in the world behind soccer.
Did not know that.
Yeah. And it's, if you just follow kind of the basic rules, you don't have to get into the minutia of it. The instant replay in it makes baseball and football and basketball look freaking childish. The instant replay is great. You can hear them. You can hear them discussing the instant replay. And then the guy will come on and he'll tell the ref, he goes, okay, ref, it's out. We have the decision. You're now on camera. Signal out. And the guy goes, out. Right? Or safe or whatever. It's like you hear them discussing, you know, what's going on. Ball is close to the bat. Please share the audio. And as you see the ball go by the bat, they show the audio file. And you're looking at this going, that ball didn't touch the bat. And then they show the audio file. And as the ball goes by the bat, you see a little spike. Oh, yep. Yep. Ball going near the bat. We have a spike. We have our ruling. That's clear. We have our ruling official. Signal, please signal out. You're on camera now. Please signal out. It's like you hear everything. So it's fascinating. I've talked way too much about cricket now. Let's talk about OSU baseball. Absolutely just giving up 3 to Texas Tech, who's not a crappy team. They're in the top 5 mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, well, they were number 9 coming in. I mean.
Yeah, they switched places basically, right? I think they're fourth or fifth. I think they're in the top 5, and I think OSU's like 7th or 8th.
They're between like 8 and 13, depending on the poll.
Oh, depending on the poll, yeah.
Yeah, that was unexpected. But, I mean, the big thing is that's going to really hurt him to host a regional, right?
Yeah.
So, hopefully they – was that the last – we're going into the Big 12 tournament, right?
I think so. Yeah, that was the last – that was the last – what was the – what did the Big 12 regular season end up?
Wait. No, there's more games. There's more games because they got another series against Baylor left, and my work computer has frozen.
No. Anyway.
So there is another, at least another series, because I was hoping to be able to see them when I was in Stillwater this weekend. But that's not looking to be the case. But then we got the Big 12. So, I mean, win the Big 12 tournament, you're going to probably be back in that space to host a regional, which is always good.
I don't know. I don't know if they have to win the Big 12 tournament to host a regional. I think you have to win. You're going to have to win to, host, I think, both, right? You'd have to.
Yeah, but it's also kind of – it's also based on rankings. So,
yeah.
You know, if they had been number three going into all of that and they won the regional, they would have had a super regional. But, that's – I don't know. Like, this team is like really feels really schizophrenic. Like, they're either like world beaters or they're terrible.
Right. Well, no. So, in other words, this is one of those deals where they're good enough to definitely make it to the College World Series, and they're more than capable of flaming out before, and not even get through a region.
The worst part is they're good enough. If you're the number three team in the country and you're there for a reason, you're good enough to win the whole damn thing. But they're also weird enough.
Yes. Well,
the problem is that their pitching is good, but their hitting is streaky. And that's always, and granted, really good pitching is better than good hitting in general. But I don't know. If they get on like a stretch where, they hit under 200 as a team, which they've done at times this season, that's not going to bode well for your chances in Omaha.
You see what I'm dealing with here, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like it's worse than having a child, this dog. It's terrible. No, I agree with you. It's like college baseball this year feels like any number of teams. Oh my God, it's Wichita State 17, Oklahoma nothing.
Wow.
Good Lord. It's literally, you've got a ton of teams that could win the Natty, I think, on the baseball side. On the softball side, I think you could dial this down to any one of maybe three or four teams probably. And OSU, they've had a great season. Again, I think things have to fall right for them to have a run, right? OU could mow the whole thing down. OU could – they could get going and everything. They could go through this thing and not lose a single game. Right.
But the baseball
feels weird.
Especially looking at like the softball, like stats and stuff, which I've been doing. Dude, there are times, I mean, granted it's also softball, which is weird, but they'll hit 350, 400 for a game as a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
If OSU is going to win the Natty in softball, they need like to catch lightning in a bottle and just hold it for what, a month.
Yeah. So I'm going to debate that. I don't think they necessarily need lightning in a bottle. right? I think they need team like OSU. I mean, there's a whole bunch of teams like OSU, right? And really what you need is you need a couple of things to fall your way, right? A couple of things kind of at the right time to fall your way. They're regional. I think their regional is awesome. Their regional really, their regional falls into their lap, right?
Right.
So then you're going to get to the super regional. And
which
then
is probably in the water too.
Well, if they win their regional, they'll be in Stillwater. I think that's a given. So if they win their regional, then it's going to become about who came out of the other regionals. It's really going to become about the matchups, right? Do you get someone who, you know, is more like OU with, you know, they're a great hitting team? You get someone who's got that pitcher that you just freaking, you know, you can't touch, and they keep you in one of those games, you know, where they hang around the whole time. So then they chip you at the end. You know, it's like you just need one or two things to kind of break right, and you can make a really good run. Baseball to me feels way more up in the air. Baseball to me feels like you could easily crap out in a regional. There's not anybody who's totally dominant, but there's a whole bunch of really decent teams who on a given night's going to beat somebody.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that completely. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, especially with baseball, because it is so random. Just hopefully they can get themselves back into a spot to host a regional. Just being at home helps.
Yeah. No, I agree. The being at home is great. I mean, what an atmosphere, right? What a great atmosphere, you know, to be at home with that. That's just super. So my next question is, spring football happened.
Yep.
Number one, do we care? Two questions. And then you, number one, do we care? Number two, is it really making much of an impact on what the team's going to look like in the fall?
I mean, did I care? Yes, because it's Oklahoma State football and I'm always going to care. Did I care a whole lot? No. especially because it wasn't even a spring game. It was a spring practice. And me and Ian talked about this. Like, I don't know if it's against the rules or whatever, but like, you know what? Bring Whedon back. Bring Dez back. Have Dez run routes against the secondary and see how they like playing against, you know, those guys. You know, do some of that. Would be really fun. I mean, spring games are kind of like spring training. There's always that team that you're like, oh, you know, the Diamondbacks went like 7-0 in spring training. They're going to be good this year. What all that bullshit. And they end up sucking or whatever. But there's also, I think it's good. I don't know if it's going to change much. I mean, there are some question marks. We're replacing a lot on the defensive end. I mean, the D line should be really good, really good. Especially if Oliver doesn't have a sophomore slump and just keep crushing like he's been crushing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the running back question is up in the air. Who's going to step up at wide receiver? I mean, you figure Presley is going to be, you know, wide receiver number one going into the season, but you never know.
But he's a slot guy. He's a slot guy, right? right? He's a slot guy.
Right. So he is a slot
gonna
guy.
Who's going to be the outside guy, yeah. right?
There's a lot of question marks. And
are we actually going to throw the ball to the Cowboy back?
Well, yeah, that's true too. Well, we were basically the Cowboy back last year.
So I was going to say, one of the Green brothers, right? Didn't they? Right. Was it number 28? I'm sounding like Gundy now, you know, number 28. I don't even know who these guys are. He had a good bowl game.
Yeah.
And he had a good bedlam playing out of that Cowboy back position. So I would say, spring schming, right? Who it goes to me, who are they going to use the Cowboy back as a receiving option? I have no concerns about running back. I have no concerns at wide receiver. We got so many guys running around, I'm not worried about it. Cowboy back, are we going to use them? Because that, to me, that's where you open stuff up, right?
Well, that's also like the ultimate safety valve, right?
That, yeah, exactly.
8-yard curl to the right side, let Spencer Sanders hit him in the numbers.
Yeah.
Move the chains, keep going, yeah.
But the other part of that is, I don't know. What was I just thinking? The other part of that, shut up. Why are you busting my chops? I mean,
the big thing is Spencer. Spencer going to be?
That's it. The biggest question to me is, and sorry, everyone, because my playmate's down here giving me crap because I'm not playing with her. The backup QB.
That How is about Illingsworth
is gone.
Transferring out. Yeah.
How about this? How about me playing golf this past weekend? Okay. I get on the first tee at my little local municipal golf course. I'm not on the first tee yet. There's a group in front of us. And I've checked in and I don't know who I'm playing with. I wasn't going to play this weekend. And then things changed, and I asked the wife, and she said, yes, go, you're fine. If you want to play, go play. So I signed up as a single, and I show up, and I don't know what my group is. Don't know the guys I'm playing with. And I see a young guy, young, tall, pretty athletic-looking guy, and he's got a Texas Longhorns baseball hat on. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to end up playing with this guy. The world is way too small. I can't do this. So it turns out he's in the group in front of me. Okay. And the way the day went, we never really ended up like hanging out, you know, like on a, like a par three where it's backed up, play is backed up or something. You're hanging on a par three or something where I could kind of chat him up a little bit. And don't you know, we get to the 17th hole. 16th hole is a short par four that I still occasionally will try to drive. And then 17 is a long par three, meaning everybody's making at least four on this hole.
Right.
So that's an area where it gets backed up. So we get over there, and the group in front of us, they haven't even teed off yet. They're like still sitting waiting for the green to clear when we walked off the 16th green. So I thought, oh, there you go. And I made the comment, you know, did you go to UT? And he goes, no, he goes, I've got some good friends who work down there and they're Texas fans. And they gave me this hat. He said, did you go to school there? And I said, no. I said, I spent time at Oklahoma State. I'm an Oklahoma State fan. He goes, oh, he goes, well, I work with Shane Illingworth.
Oh, shit.
He said, what? I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. He says that I got out of school. He says, and I'm working with some sports-related company, and I guess he's training in, like, Southern California with whoever. I don't know. And he had gone to high school with him and then knew him through the work. And I was like, holy crap, I can't, this is too much for me. This is like, this the world is getting incestuous. It's getting so small. But so there you go. So that got me on the thing of, well, I can't wait to see who the backup QB is, because you've only got two options. You only got two options, and one of them is named Gundy.
Yeah, I mean, that would be something. I mean, that would be like the most Oklahoma State thing ever if, like, God forbid, Spencer goes down. Like, and then
who trots Gundy, out?
Gundy comes out and just lights it the fuck up.
Oh my God. So you've got Rangel, right? You've got Rangel and you've got Gundy. Who the hell else? Hey,
there's still time for transfer portal. It'll open back up before the season starts.
That's true. That's true. Oh my God. I can't. That's going to be so fascinating. This is going to be, I think, a really incredible season of Big 12 football. All right.
Well, and kind of the last, it's the last of the, as we've known it for a decade,
right.
Which I like the new schools coming in, everything else. But I love playing everybody. I love that format. I wish we could stay there. I know we can't for financial reasons, everything else, but that was always a thing. And it happens in the SEC a lot is who are you ducking? You know, you may or may not, I mean, especially with they're 14 teams now, about to be 16. You may only play Bama I heard something. It was either for the ACC. It was the SEC that I don't remember which team it was, but only if you had been there for 5 years did you play Florida.
Interesting.
So much about, like, everyone's like, it's perceived as a great conference and you're always playing tough games. Like, well, kind of. But you're also able to duck people. You may not have to play Bama for 3 or 4 years, or Georgia, or Auburn.
Yeah,
not great.
Well, I'll tell you what. I am going to absolutely miss Bedlam.
Me too.
I mean, that was my childhood in football. That's how I was raised. On Oklahoma State football, like the big eight. I mean, that was a big deal, you know, playing Nebraska, playing Colorado, playing Missouri. Those were huge. It's like every game felt important, right? And then Bedlam was just so important. We always got our ass kicked, but it was important. Every year you kind of got up for it, right? And I have to say, especially in the last, you know, so many years where it's become way more competitive, right? The energy going into that game this year was so incredible. Really? It was just so incredible. And that game was nuts. And it just
– we're losing it, yeah. I mean, what we know is college football is dying.
Yeah, it's away. I could give a shit about Texas.
I said it on the podcast after the Big 12 championship game. Was it felt like this was our last year to win a real college football title? Like, as college football, as I know it,
ending. Yeah. I mean, win a college football title in a conference that involves OU, right? Because that's really what it is. To hell with Texas. Texas is about to go to the SEC
and have to play
Texas A&M every year, and they're going to look so average. They're just going to be so average at best. I just can't wait for it. It's like that is such a monumental waste of athletic money, that whole thing. But that's for a whole nother discussion. I'm going to so miss playing Oklahoma in everything, right? Oh, no. So that was OU's. It's the top of the eighth, and a guy just hit a double for OU, and that was their first hit of the game.
Damn.
Wichita State was throwing a no-hitter up to that point.
I had just hit to a Wichita State baseball game once upon a time.
The only thing I know about Wichita State is I was in Shocker Arena in 1988 when Jesse Jackson was running for the Democratic presidential nomination, and he came and gave a speech, and a bunch of us, like maybe 10 or 12 of us from the college, the small private college I was going to at the time, near Wichita, drove up and went to that. And so that's my only exposure to Wichita State. And it's gone again. Jacob is gone again, people. He's gone again. He can't cut this out. This has to be a part of the podcast.
Yeah, it has to be a part of the podcast. It happens. Sometimes you gotta pee and you don't want to take a break.
Yeah, but I'm the old guy and I'm down in the basement. I haven't peed yet.
Well, I've also put down a whole lot of water today, too.
Oh, there you go. But yeah, so I'm curious. I'm eager to see kind of what the QB thing turns into. I think all the other positions are going to be fine. You know, you have to think the defense takes a step back just because we have such high expectations, right? From Jim Knowles.
Everybody I've read says that the new guy's better than Knowles, but we had two anchors at that linebacker position that's you can't replace. Like, that's going to be the issue. And that you have two really good, strong, smart, fast linebackers like we had. That just leaves a hole right in the middle of the field. And that's what
the play Derek Harper made to tackle Caleb Williams on that fourth and whatever. That's just an all-timer to me. That was the game. You know, Colin Oliver crawling across the ground and grabbing him by the ankles is great. But that play, to me, that was the play, right? When he missed him once, and then came back and got him. And I'll say this. I'm so jacked up to see how Malcolm Rodriguez does. In the league. And I'm so intrigued to see what happens at Ohio State with Jim Knowles. Very intrigued. It's like there's a part of me, as much as I could dislike Ohio State, there's a part of me that wants to see like the mad scientist like go up there and just like show up and just like shut down Alabama so bad they can't function. Right. It's like there's a part of me that kind of wants to see it to a degree. Right. And then there's that tiny part of me that wants to see him not do well up there and say, see, you should have stayed in Stillwater.
Right. Well, that's going to be the interesting thing is, you know, he was here for what, 4 or 5 seasons?
Four?
I think four.
Four, but right?
I think it was four, right? But the thing is his really great defenses were with guys who probably shouldn't have been here, but they got an extra year because of COVID. Malcolm was that way. There was a bunch of guys who were like fifth year who might have been grad transfers the year before. So
I'll tell you think about Spencer Sanders. Think about Spencer Sanders, okay? We've all had our love-hate with him, right?
Yeah.
That guy is about to be the old man. And being the old man...
two more years of eligibility left.
Right? Being the old man is a big deal. We saw Brandon Whedon. being the old mature guy that's like doesn't give a shit, right? This is college football. Come on, guys, let's go do this. Right? That doesn't get fazed by the crap. You know, if he can be in that mode, this could be the year that we all was hoping Spencer would have 2 years ago.
Right. Well, I wonder, like, because he has been around for a while, and I know Ian has disagreed with me on this, but I don't know. I think there's a chance, a good chance, he has a Kenny Pickett year, where he goes from third or fourth round to Heisman chatter, first rounder, like. And if he doesn't this year, he's going to have another year. Like, it feels like he's been around forever.
He's not coming back. Okay, all right. Okay, so then we're going to have to do two things here. Number one, I'm going full Ian here. Spencer Sanders is not getting drafted in the NFL. Ain't happening. No way. Know how, stop smoking the crack. Number two, Spencer Sanders ain't winning the Heisman. And no, I don't mean that.
I didn't say win Heisman, I said Heisman chatter.
He's not going to do that. He's not going to do it because he's going to throw in a game. That's whatever. And OSU, you know, in order for an OSU player to win the Heisman, right, there's only two ways for an OSU guy to win the Heisman. We know what one of them is because we've seen it, right? He's got to have a year that's like, you know, otherworldly. That still hasn't been touched, even though guys are playing how many more games than he played, and they're counting the bowl games and the playoff games and the whatever games, and nobody can bother him, right? So that's how otherworldly Barry Sanders' season was. If you're literally any player on Oklahoma State, you've got to put up such numbers that are just off the planet, or you've got to be the best player on a team that, like, plays for the national championship or some stuff like that, right? That's all I'm saying. I think Spencer Sanders could have an incredible year. He could have his best year that he's ever had at Oklahoma State, and not be in a Heisman conversation, right? Just because of the nature of the beast, I think. But he's not getting drafted. Jacob, he's not getting drafted. I don't care if he has a Kenny Pickett year. Spencer Sanders ain't getting drafted. And if he does, I want that GM's money. I want his salary. And I like Spencer. He's a good kid. He's clearly a good kid, right? He seems to have the right head on his shoulders, despite whatever we may think or we haven't heard or whatever. He's got the right head on his shoulders, and it's like, yeah, he ain't getting drafted. That's not happening.
He might. You never know, man. Maybe he makes a leap.
Yeah, well, as Jesse Jackson said in Shocker Arena back in 1988, keep hope alive.
I mean, I don't know. Quarterbacks are such at a premium. I think someone might, if he has a really good season, like make a really big leap forward. I mean, the Spencer Sanders we've seen in his career so far, no. But if he has sort of that big jump, I could see him going fifth round, sixth round, you know.
My ears are falling off my head. I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I need more scotch. Here we go. I got to have more scotch after that. So we got anything else to burn up? What do we got? The girls golf regionals, boys read golf regionals.
Baseball, we cover baseball, softball, football. Yeah. I mean, I think we pretty much
cross country, track was actually track and cross country was on TV this weekend. It's like it was on, I can't remember if it was on, I was trying to find, I think it was NA, I was trying to find NHL. I was trying to stream the NHL and I went on, I don't know if it was Paramount Plus or something. And they had this thing up and it said Big 12 Track and Field Championships. I was like, what? You gonna put that on TV? No, OSU Sports is like, OSU Sports is in a really good era right now. They're jamming. You got a lot of quality. You know, now we just need Mike Boynton to have a year. This is his year. I will say this, and I think I'm on the boat with Jacob here. This is a season we need to see something. Right? This would be the season.
He's got to make the tournament this year.
And I don't think just make the tournament. I don't think it's just make the tournament. I think you got to push the top three in the conference.
Yeah.
You've had enough years to recruit and bring your guys in. You know, you showed us you could go get a big guy. You know, you went and got, you know, Cade, who was a great thing. And okay, his brother came and coached and blah, blah, blah. So what? You know, I think you need to show that now you can take those guys and you can turn them into something. Because to me, basketball, even is more than football, right? Basketball. That's the one opportunity to say, I can take so many guys and I can make them more than the sum of their parts, right? That's really, right? That is really, that to me, basketball is the one sport where you can say, these five guys or any combination of 5 or 10 guys together are better than your 3 or 4 superstars because they play together, right? And I just think this is he needs to show he can push the top of the conference. Because I think for me, Oklahoma State in any sport, I think the university has shown athletically that in any sport, you have the ability to compete at the top levels of the conference.
Yeah, we should be competing for a Big 12 title, basically no matter the sport.
Right, or pushing. At least you're you're pushing the top. Yeah.
Yeah, you're in the conversation. You're not Kansas in football.
Oh, good Lord.
Or
you're not Texas in football, who constantly disappoints and then loses to Kansas in football.
But there was over the weekend, TCU beat, I'm pretty sure it was Kansas, 30-3 in baseball. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 30. Please, God. I mean, how can you be worse than your football team? Good Lord.
Hey, they got basketball, right?
Yep. So, well, I think we've exhausted this, Jacob.
Yes, sir. I think we have. All right, Cowboys and Cowgirls. As always, check us out on CowboysRifleFree.com. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob Ingles. And Robert, you got anything you want to say before we head out?
No, guys, it's always a pleasure. Hit me up on Twitter. You know I'm game. Whether it's OSU fans, OU fans, even Texas fans. come at me. I'll have a conversation. It's all good. It's all Twitter. It's just sports. Robert W underscore OKST on Twitter. Let's go have some fun.
Awesome. Well, we'll see y'all next time.